Jason Wisdom of Wisdom Consulting has been working with companies in the legal, financial, educational, and medical industries for 15 years, showing them how to leverage technology as a business and bridging communication gaps between their business and IT. Jason resides in New York City and works with companies all over the world. He and Ed talk about how lawyers can increase their revenue by embracing the real benefits of technology.
Jason, thanks for joining us today. I look forward to our discussion about technology in the legal field.
Thank you, Ed.
It seems that technology can be viewed both in the light of helping lawyers provide the service they otherwise couldn't and or reducing the cost of service that they do provide. In your experience, what's been the primary benefit to lawyers from the technology that they do use?
Well, that's a good question. Technology, in my experience, is often misunderstood. Lawyers benefit a lot from personal technology, including smartphones and now tablets, but how to use technology to power business systems, whether individual or corporate, is often a mystery. The fact is that technology has created many ways to make management of large, small law firms or individual practices much easier, and while I could probably spend all day talking about individual advances, technology's benefits generally fall into three categories for business benefit. One is to increase revenues, two is to cut costs or cut overhead, and three is to build a brand.
Well, I understand each of those segments. Why don't we take them one at a time? How is it that technology increases revenue?
How can technology increase revenue? So one idea is, let's say you have a number of clients. You can map out who your client is, who is in your client base, who is receiving which of your services, who is not, and you can generate a report to quickly identify any gaps that clients and or the firm may have overlooked. This is fairly easy for either the IT department or a technology consultant to set up as a report, which you can check every 3 months or so. That's one piece of low-hanging fruit. More generally speaking, technology is generally good at streamlining what you do so that you can automate it, do more of it, and end up spending your time growing the business rather than repeating the same actions. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so in other words, that would be sort of a cost reduction used for technology, because we're reducing the cost, we're systematizing it, we're sort of automating it, and that gives us more time then to go forward and do marketing or practice development efforts. Is that what you're saying?
That's a big part of it. The only thing I would add to that is that you can take services they actually bill out for and automate those services and replicate that as almost a product, a service-based product for other people. So that's not necessarily cutting costs. It would be cutting costs from a widespread fulfillment, so that you can increase your volume of business without proportionally increasing your overhead.
Okay. So the marginal revenue increases is what you're saying in part.
Exactly. You can have exponential revenue increases through technology and not just linear increases in technology.
Right.
In revenue.
And in the legal field, when you're billing by the hour, that becomes a two-edged sword because you've got to spend money to get the technology. Then you can do what you do faster, which means that the amount of time you're spending is less, which means if you're billing by the hour, your revenue goes down. So not only have your costs gone up, but your revenue goes down. So this is a motivator, to some degree, to cause the lawyer to bill, well, alternative fees or value billing is one way of saying it, but another way of saying it is creating a laundry list of, as you say, products. You've productized your practice, and each element, whether it be a prospectus or a will or whatever it might be, each element here is a product, and it costs X number of dollars to the client, and the lawyer is benefiting because he or she is able to produce that product more efficiently by use of the technology.
Right, and you're touching on a very decades-old debate, and that is challenging the status quo that things should require a lot of hard work billed by a comparable rate per hour. And technology is largely dispelling the myth of all that, because the same, for example, how many hours does it take for Google to put your advertisement on their web page? The answer is not a lot. In fact, the answer is almost zero. A few people administer Google advertising for the whole world. However, you're not paying by the hour. You're paying by the results. You're paying for when people click. So there are a lot of new compensation models coming out that replace the challenge of payment for time spent. And when new advances in technology come out, what used to take 10 hours can literally take 1 hour. I have seen this happen many times. If you have, say, I had one client, one law firm, that I did a new client welcome procedure, a new client initial fill out, the paperwork, we'll process your paperwork, we'll get clients entered into our system.
Right.
And this law firm used to charge clients a lot of money by the hour so that they could receive people coming in, and it chased a lot of new business away. So what I helped this company do was automate all that, so it was just a single web form. One person would review it, call this person if there were any questions. It took about 15 to 30 minutes of manual processing time per client, which used to take hours. And this is just repeating the same procedure again and again. Why would anybody in their right mind pay $400 an hour to have somebody read through a form and ask them questions and handwrite them down? It's ridiculous. So this benefited the customer because the new clients were not asking questions right off the bat. And this also benefited the law firm because they had taking a headache out of the pipeline. That's just one very simple example.
Now, in your example of automating the intake procedure, did the form or the interaction with the computer by the client or prospect take place at their facility, at their business, or at their home, or did they do that in the offices of the law firm?
It was done over the web browser, but it was a password-protected, secure website, so it was not available to the public. They were given an exclusive address that had a linked code, so not anyone, Joe Public, could go in. At the same time, somebody could do it from the comfort of their own home, or in this case, it was for injuries from the comfort of their hospital.
Okay, so this was before or after the client was engaged, before or after the law firm was engaged by the client?
This is after the client decided to hire the law firm and before they actually started doing work with each other.
Okay. All right. And in this particular case, I take it was a injury, so it's a personal injury law firm, which means that they get paid on contingency only.
And a lot of the personal injury parts were contingency. They had it was a large law firm. I don't want to mention the name, but they did much more than just contingency work. They did a good amount of hourly work, and they ended up using the system for all types of fields, just giving a different couple of pages for their questionnaire depending on what type of client they were going to have. Again, this was all able to be automated, whereas before it was a paperwork nightmare.
Great example. Now, one of the things that lawyers by nature they're not at the bleeding edge of technology. It's enough that they're at the leading edge, though most are really not early adapters. I think maybe the Apple iPod is proving this somewhat old thought, but still basically lawyers tend to follow rather than lead in the technology. How have you seen lawyers react to the changes and improvements in the technologies that we've been talking about and others that, that you come across in your work?
Okay, I'm just taking a couple of notes here. A first, nice comment on the Apple products. And one thing I want to point out is what Apple's MP3 players were nothing new. Personal electronics, consumer electronics were nothing new. But what Apple did, and this ties into your question, what they did well was they made their products easy to use. I remember just a few years before the iPod came out, the days of digital cameras and camcorders with so many features they were almost impossible to figure out. The very first iPod that came out was incredibly simple, and the coolness, the hip image that they portrayed around that, they worked well together. And nowadays, everything from digital cameras to video cameras to smartphones, even not made by Apple, are much easier to use. So I think it's not just lawyers that have been slow adapters to a lot of new technology, but I think everybody outside of technology circles have been slow adapters and struggling to catch up with the leading edge. I hesitate to recommend people keep up with the bleeding edge, which is the brand new stuff coming up, coming out. I actually recommend people shy away from that. Unless, of course, you represent a bleeding edge technology company, in which case you can only help yourself by being familiar with what they're doing. But keeping up with technology for the sake of keeping up with technology is counterproductive unless that is your field. It would be like asking somebody who is in school teaching to keep up with patent law. So focus your time where it is most valuable. What I recommend is use technologies that make your life better. Don't use a technology because it's in fashion. It may be gone in a year. A lot of technology companies go out of business. Also, a lot of technologies make life more complicated and not easier. And I have a couple examples. A few years ago, I bought a business card reader. It cost about $300, and I thought I would scan all the business cards I met of people I met at events. It would make my networking life better. It ended up doing the opposite. It jammed regularly. It ate up business cards. It was slow, and it misread information, including phone numbers and email addresses. So I would call people 3 weeks later, get a wrong number, have to go back through my card catalog. It was a waste of about 40, 60 hours of my time struggling to get it to work the way it was supposed to work. And in the end, I threw it in the trash. That's an example of how technology had a great promise, but it actually didn't make my life better, so I wouldn't recommend somebody do that. On the other hand, I love Mint.com, as in mint leaves. It makes my personal financial management much easier. I download all of my statements to this one place, and I've ditched Quicken for good.
I don't think they want to hear that, but that's...
Actually, I think Quicken has bought Mint.com recently, so they...
Well, if you can't beat them, buy them.
pretty much, because they were competing head-to-head, and then they said, we cannot do this better than they are doing. Our pay-for-software can't beat this free software, so we're just going to buy them out.
Interesting. Okay. Well, let me ask you another question. When a lawyer... as is the case with many of our listeners, doesn't have a full-time IT staff to maintain what they do have, how can they deal with all the updates, the breakdowns, and the other changes in both applications and hardware that seem to pop up every day?
That's a good question. I would say, are you talking about individual lawyers or firms?
Let's talk about individuals, because the firms, they're going to find the budget. But individuals may not be able to find the budget so easily.
And large law firms do have, and they should have, a permanent IT presence, et cetera. I'm going to even include small firms in this.
Mm-hmm.
It's no longer necessary to have a full-time IT staff if you're a sole practitioner or a small firm. The reason is, and possibly even a mid-sized firm, the reason is there are other options. In every city, certainly in the United States and most countries in the world, most developed countries in the world, there are IT support service companies that have sprung up. So if you are an individual, you can hire somebody to manage your website, your email, and your bookkeeping system, QuickBooks, or whatever you happen to be using.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a small IT firm and you're using a customer relationship management software, CRM, Salesforce, SalesLogix, I don't mean to get too technical, but you can hire an IT support company to manage all of that, and you're saving a lot of overhead from having to hire full-time staff, pay their salaries, pay their benefits, pay their learning curves. The benefit that I like the best to, I hesitate to use the word outsourcing, even though it is the right word. You're not offshoring. You're not hiring out to India or the Philippines. What you're doing is you're hiring it, you're farming it out to another company, local to your own city if you prefer, who will take care of all that. And the biggest benefit besides, well, there's two benefits. One, you're reducing your overhead, and two, any problems you're likely to face with your IT system have been faced before. So
right.
If you have a company that is managing several lawyers or several small law firms, chances are they've seen that already, and it will take them 20 minutes to fix it rather than 2.5 days.
And I think, interestingly enough, with sites such as LogMeIn and GoToMyPC and so forth, all of this now can be done remotely. You don't have to have somebody on site most often.
Right, and a number of companies have their own remote desktop control software that they can just install a little widget on your machine. It's not spyware, it's not spamware, but they just come in, install a little program, and then from their office half a mile away, they can, it's almost like they're there. They can see your desktop, they can turn it on or off. It's the exact same capabilities that an IT staff down the hall would have.
Well, one of the things that I find interesting, and I find myself in the position of being the bridge, if you will, or the communicator between lawyers and geeky types or technology savvy types such as yourself, I wind up being the communicator. And what I'm suggesting is that there seems to be, in some instances, a language barrier between the IT folks and lawyers. And this is particularly true with the older generation of lawyers who have been out of law school more than 5 to, say, 9 years. They've been practicing, they're established and so forth, and they have their set ways. I think the young people coming out of law school today find it much more facile to work with the technology. But how do you suggest that the lawyers and the technology folks learn a common language?
That's one of the most common problems facing any industry work dealing with technology. And you'd be surprised, there still is a gap even among younger people. The reason is that lawyers spend years learning the law and tend to use legal terms when they speak in the office. Technology people spend years learning technology and tend to use technical terms when they speak in the office. So communication is going to have gaps. Gaps in communication are going to be an issue. So how to resolve it? I recommend two approaches. One is to hire a liaison person, such as, and this is for firms. For individuals, you want to find somebody in technology who can speak your language, who can learn it, but I'll get back to that. For firms, it's It's common to hire a liaison person such as a business analyst or a senior executive where a large part of their responsibility is to specifically bridge communication between lawyers, leadership, and technology. This might sound like overkill to have a senior executive's full-time job just to be translation, but it really is a full-time job in my experience. The other option is to have technology staff and just assimilate them into your approach, into your language, to your way of speaking. In my experience, it takes about 6 months for a technology person to learn legal jargon. And they can learn legal jargon because it's the same concept. It's memorizing terms and how things work, just a different. And technology people do this all the time with the hundreds of technologies that they deal with to put them all together. They have to learn a lot of terms and jargons to make it all work. And it's possible to learn legal terms. One mistake I do see a lot of companies make is they say, we want somebody who has 2 or 3 years in the legal industry minimum, and they let a lot of well-qualified candidates go that are eager to learn and expand their horizons. And these companies end up spending longer looking for somebody who already has industry experience from a technician. They spend longer looking for somebody that has experience in the industry than it would take for somebody outside of the industry to come up to speed. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's interesting. It's whether you hire somebody with experience and a proven track record and therefore pay more, or somebody with less experience in your particular industry but with a good work ethic and a willingness to learn what's needed in order to provide the services that are requested, and coincidentally pay them a little bit less, at least at the beginning.
Right. Always hire attitude. Always hire attitude.
I couldn't agree with you more. Well, Jason, I want to thank you for joining us today and sharing some insights into the legal community and the technology community and where and how they may bridge one another's hideouts.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for having me on your show. I've really enjoyed this.
Our pleasure. Thank you. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
You have been listening to a Law Biz podcast. For more podcasts, please visit www.lawbiz.com/podcasts.html. You can read more about this and other topics from the business of law at www.lawbizblog.com, or start your own discussion about this topic at www.lawbizforum.com. Join today. Feel free to tell your friends and colleagues about Law Biz podcasts. You may duplicate this program in part or in whole, provided that you retain appropriate attribution and copyright notices.